is Tuesday, November 17th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, another badly needed dose of hope as coronavirus cases surge.
We're looking forward to making about 500 million to a billion doses next year, but that is going to be a 24/7 operation.
President-elect Joe Biden says without cooperation on a transition from the Trump administration, more people will die.
It's important that it be done, that there be coordination now. Now or as rapidly as we can get that done.
Also ahead, a new app identifies mosquitoes by buzzing sound. It's all on today's International Edition. More good news as the coronavirus continues to spread rapidly, bringing bad news across the United States and globally. A second experimental COVID-19 vaccine has yielded extraordinarily strong early results. Moderna, Inc. said Monday its vaccine appears to be 94.5% effective, according to clinical results released on Monday on their preliminary data from an ongoing study. Moderna President Stephen Hoge.
It won't be Moderna alone that solves this problem. It's going to require many vaccines, as we've been saying for a while, but we hope to be able to do our part from here forward. And this is a really important milestone in that journey.
World Health Organization Director of Immunization, Dr. Catherine O'Brien, says that they welcome the promising news from Moderna.
This is a two-dose vaccine, and certainly any vaccine that can achieve a one-dose vaccine is certainly easier to deliver than a two-dose vaccine. And of course, the cold chain characteristics are also important.
Neil Browning, who was among the first participants in Moderna's study, woke up to numerous alerts on his phone about the news.
That's just excellent news. I'm super happy to be a part of this and to try and help bring some kind of peace back to the world.
Browning received his first shot in March, followed by a second dose a month later. He was part of a group of 45 healthy individuals who volunteered for the first stage of Moderna's vaccine study.
I was just kind of throwing my name in the hat to see if this was something I could do to help out mankind. It's been kind of a whirlwind to see how badly this has spiraled out of control in countries that aren't locking down and taking the precautions seriously. So it's definitely something that could help the world a lot if we can get this vaccine out sooner.
A week ago, Pfizer announced its own vaccine appeared to be 90% effective, news that put now both companies on track to seek permission within weeks for emergency use in the United States. As coronavirus cases rise in the United States, the transition team for President-elect Joe Biden is asking the Trump administration to begin the transition process this week to help the country. Michelle Quinn reports.
Wherever you look in the U.S., the coronavirus pandemic is surging, but the virus responsible for the COVID-19 disease is caught up in a political drama. Whether President Donald Trump will allow cooperation between his administration and the team for Joe Biden, the projected winner of the 2020 presidential race, who would be inaugurated on January 20th. So far, Trump, who continues to allege without evidence that there was widespread voter fraud, has not allowed a transition to a new government to begin. Biden team members say that is endangering the country amid the pandemic's surge. Dr. Atul Gawande is a member of the Biden COVID-19 Advisory Board.
It is in the nation's interest that the transition team get the threat assessments that the team knows about, understand the vaccine distribution plans. We need to know where the stockpiles are, what the status is of masks and gloves. There's a lot of information that needs to be transmitted. It can't wait to the last minute.
President Trump hasn't attended a virus task force meeting in 5 months, according to the Washington Post. But the president spoke last week about the timeline of a vaccine for the COVID-19 disease.
And this process is starting right away. Millions of doses will soon be going out the door. They're all ready, waiting for that final approval.
Admiral Brett Giroir, member of the White House Coronavirus Task Force, says that the Trump administration's efforts to combat the infection are shared widely with the public, including members of Biden's team.
I want to be as transparent as possible with everybody. This is not a political issue. This is an issue of public health and saving American lives. And I think there's nothing more important than that.
John Bolton, a former Trump national security advisor, called on Republican leaders to push the White House to share information. about the virus and national security with the incoming Biden administration.
And again, I just think it requires Republicans to explain that in the nature of things, we need a transition, and we should proceed with it as soon as we can.
According to the Johns Hopkins University, the U.S. currently has nearly 11 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 and close to 246,000 deaths. The U.S. leads the world in the number of cases. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
Lawrence Gostin, a professor of global health law at Georgetown University, says without the Trump administration working collaboratively with the incoming Biden administration, vaccine distribution will be slowed down.
He's not coordinating the delivery. This is going to be, the most challenging medical distribution project of our lifetimes.
President-elect Joe Biden did speak out on Monday, warning that President Trump's refusal to recognize the transition prior to the January 20th inauguration could have dire consequences amid the coronavirus pandemic.
The vaccine is important. It's of little use until you're vaccinated.
Joining us now for the latest is VOA White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman. Steve, what can you tell us about Biden's statements and the concerns?
Yes, Lori, the president-elect had a very blunt statement when he was asked by a reporter in Wilmington, Delaware about this on Monday. He said, more people may die if we don't coordinate. There is increasing frustration in the transition team of the lack of recognition by President Trump that Joe Biden is the president-elect and the refusal of the Trump administration to get the wheels moving to free up funds and office space, and more importantly, to allow the president-elect and the vice president-elect to receive all sorts of briefings about everything from foreign threats to the coronavirus.
We know Joe Biden has a long history with dealing with foreign leaders and with Congress. And so he's not going in there as an amateur by any means. He knows his way around, but obviously there are things that he is not able to move forward on or prepare for. So what kinds of difficulties is this going to cause, and how could it have a detrimental impact?
Well, it's small and large. I guess smaller is essentially issues of protocol where communications are coming in to the president-elect, but the State Department is not passing those on. Some leaders, American allies, are speaking directly to the president-elect, short-circuiting the State Department. And then, of course, a larger issue is dealing with national security threats that the president-elect would normally be briefed on. There's something called the president's daily brief that, by tradition, the president-elect would also be read into. Now, interestingly enough, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, because she's a U.S. senator on the Senate's Intelligence Committee, she does have access to some of this classified information through her old job, which she's still in until she becomes the vice president. But the president-elect is not getting those sort of briefings yet.
And what about the pandemic and the impact on what he will be able to do to start getting this thing
Certainly.
Under control and, of course, potential vaccine?
Right. For example, you had a call between the White House Coronavirus Task Force and state governors on Monday, but there was no one from the Biden transition team on that call. It would seem to make sense that they would be participating in that for a smooth handover. And with the plan for the rollout of these vaccines, the president-elect has his own team of advisors, and they very much would want to coordinate with many of those in the current administration for a smooth handover and coordination. And there are those in the Trump administration who would like to participate in that sort of cooperation as well. But until the president gives a green light, that's not happening. The president-elect warned of a very dark winter ahead, and he called for immediate congressional passage of this HEROES Act, as it's called. This is a proposed $3 trillion stimulus package in response to the economic devastation that we've seen from the coronavirus pandemic. Biden was pretty blunt. He said the idea that the president is still playing golf and not doing anything about it is beyond my comprehension. At least you'd think he'd want to go off on a positive note. Prodding the president to push for the passage of this package. Biden pointing out that people are running out of their unemployment insurance, 20 million people on the verge of losing their homes because they can't make mortgage payments, and a lot of renters being kicked out or on the verge of being put out on the streets because they can't pay their rent.
White House Bureau Chief Steve Herman, thanks so much. We're closing in on a year with a viral pandemic that has affected more than 47 million people and claimed the lives of more than 1 million, according to the World Health Organization. As VOA's Carol Pearson reports, people are now suffering from what's being called pandemic fatigue.
Throughout the world, people are tired of this pandemic, tired of wearing masks, tired of practicing social distancing, and health workers are tired too. Howard Catton is with the International Council of Nurses.
So we're extremely concerned about the mental health impacts on nurses.
Nurses and other health workers stay with the dying when no one else can.
It's just hard to see somebody passing in front of your eyes.
Health workers have been putting in long hours since the beginning of the pandemic when people cheered their heroics. And now there's another spike. As the pandemic continues, people are having difficulty maintaining safe habits. That's because over time, as we adjust to a threat and stress levels drop, it's natural to let our guard down. But it's important to remember that while we may take a break on safety measures, COVID-19 doesn't. It keeps infecting people at markets, at demonstrations. COVID doesn't care about the cause or political affiliation. The World Health Organization urges global leaders to acknowledge the hardships people are facing. Dr. Ngozi Ezika is the top doctor in the state of Illinois.
I understand how pandemic fatigue is striking everyone. It's real. People are tired of not seeing their families. The way we work, the way we live, the way we play has all changed. And the harsh reality is that the sacrifices we've made and that we continue to make do not have a future expiration date.
Even with a vaccine on the horizon, experts say the only way to fight fatigue is with stamina. Dr. Scott B. is a psychologist with the Cleveland Clinic.
I call it willingness. Willingness to do uncomfortable things because we value them and deem them worthwhile, and they protect ourselves and those that we care about.
Experts recommend making safety measures like hand washing a habit. People can also reduce the risk while doing the things that make them happy.
Finding a new mask, something that excites you, a new social distancing activity, finding something novel and new is a way we excite our brains, and it's a way we can overcome fatigue.
Experts say if people are asked to be part of the solution, they'll cooperate more. It's worked to end other pandemics. It can work in this one. And someday the pandemic will end. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
The Trump administration is planning to pull some American troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan before Trump's term ends. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The president has long railed against the U.S. troop presence in the Middle East and is expected to slash it before leaving office. A U.S. official says the number of American troops in Afghanistan will be cut nearly in half to 2,500 by January 15th. That falls short of the president's original goal of having all troops leave Afghanistan by Christmas. The Pentagon's also expecting to cut the Iraq troop presence to 2,500, a drop of more than 500. The official says military leaders have been told about the planned withdrawals, but an executive order has not yet gone to commanders. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The conflict in Ethiopia's rebellious Tigray region is less than 2 weeks old, but it's already having a growing regional impact, with effects felt in Sudan, Eritrea, and Somalia. Mohamed Youssef has the latest from Nairobi.
Ethiopian government forces have captured the town of Alamata, 120 kilometers from the Tigray region's capital, Mekele, after nearly 2 weeks of fighting. Mustafa Ali is a Horn of Africa security expert. Despite the capture of Alamata, he says the federal government is facing a long conflict.
This tells you that Ethiopia is advancing and is going to capture more ground. But here is the challenge. This war might turn to become a major drawn-out guerrilla fighting that will be very hard for the Ethiopian soldiers to dislodge the TPLF.
Ethiopia's military attacked fighters loyal to the Tigray regional government this month after Tigrayan forces allegedly assaulted a military base. The war has already sent more than 20,000 civilians to flee to Sudan for safety, a sign of the region's worsening humanitarian situation. The war escalated in recent days. Tigray's regional president, Debretsion Gebremichael, said his forces attacked Eritrea with missiles and warned there will be more attacks. Tigray accuses Eritrea of sending troops to attack them, an allegation denied by Eritrea. Ali says the involvement of Eritrea will strengthen the Ethiopian government's chances of winning the war.
The war is going to be more deadly, and there will be a lot more refugees coming out of the conflict itself. The entry of Eritrea will give Abiy Ahmed an upper hand in that he will be able to use the Eritrean forces, their expertise and understanding of the terrain, basically, because all these are Tigrayans.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed said Sunday his forces can handle the fighting and don't need assistance from another country. In recent days, the Ethiopian government has pulled some troops from Somalia to help quell the armed uprising. That move may have a negative impact on Somalia, says Comfort Ero, the Africa Programme Director for the International Crisis Group.
This also sort of puts Somalia into jeopardy, especially as Somalia gets ready for presidential and parliamentary elections. And as you know, there is a very close relationship between Prime Minister Abiy and President Farmajo. The most worrying concern would be what this would mean for Sudan, given its own very fragile stability at the moment, and then Somalia as it enters into election.
Thomas Murphy, the Sub-Saharan Africa Intelligence Analyst for the Risk Advisory Group, says the conflict will also stretch Ethiopia's internal security apparatus.
There's widespread bouts of intercommunal violence going on across the Amhara region, across the Oromo region, and across the Somali and Southern Peoples regions. And the army is quite often having to deploy to contain that, in particularly in situations where local security forces are unable to do so. The fact that the federal government is now involved in this conflict against the Tigray region is only going to stretch that capacity further and force Abiy to perhaps make some tough decisions about, you know, deployments in Somalia, whether that be for AMISOM or more broadly.
AMISOM is the African Union mission in Somalia. The United States, the United Nations and other world powers have called for a halt to the fighting and start of mediation efforts, so far to no avail, as the federal government has ruled out any talks with the regional leaders. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Israel has announced that it will be going ahead with plans to build more than 1,200 new homes in East Jerusalem. Palestinians say the move will make a future Palestinian state impossible, as it will divide between Bethlehem and East Jerusalem. The Israeli announcement could cause tension between Israel and the administration of President-elect Joe Biden. Linda Gradstein reports for VOA from Jerusalem.
Israel announced bids for more than 1,200 homes in an area called Givat HaMatos, which is beyond the 1967 border. Israel says it is a neighborhood of Jerusalem, but Palestinians say it is a Jewish settlement built on land Israel occupied in 1967. The bids are due in by January 18th, just 2 days before President-elect Biden is due to take office. Brian Reeves of the Israeli group Peace Now, which opposes settlement expansion, says U.S. policy under Biden could change.
We expect that under the Biden administration, you won't see nearly as many settlement approvals as you saw under the Trump administration. But understand that there was a spike in settlement plan approvals under the Trump administration, and we're going to see the construction, the beginning of that construction, in the next 4 years.
Under President Donald Trump, U.S. policy changed from seeing Jewish settlements as illegal to recognizing them. Trump's peace plan even paved the way for Israel to annex up to a third of the West Bank, although that plan was shelved as part of the deal for normalization of relations with the United Arab Emirates and Bahrain. European Union officials condemned the Israeli plans, saying they would make a Palestinian state in the future much more difficult. The new construction is between Jerusalem and Bethlehem, and critics say it will make it harder to make East Jerusalem the capital of a future Palestinian state. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu recently said Israel will continue to build in Jerusalem to benefit both the Arab and Jewish residents of the city. He said Israel will build 4,000 new housing units in Jerusalem, including the 1,200 in Givat HaMatos. Netanyahu has repeatedly said that a united Jerusalem will remain under Israeli sovereignty. There are already almost 500,000 Jewish settlers living in the West Bank, along with more than 200,000 in East Jerusalem. Brian Reeves of Peace Now said settlement expansion will eventually make a Palestinian state impossible. The Israeli announcement comes days before a stop by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in Israel. Israeli media reports say he will visit a Jewish settlement as well, becoming the first senior official to do so in an official capacity. Linda Gradstein for VOA News, Jerusalem.
You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
They're still trying to figure out what are the specific policies from the White House.
VOA Asia, your daily digest of top Asia stories.
Beijing has especially hazardous levels of air pollution.
Blending American and Asian perspectives.
China is protecting wildlife.
Original reports and series, education, health, technology. Stories that mean something to your daily life. VOA Asia.
VOA's International Edition continues. The high-pitched whine of a mosquito is an annoying sound, but scientists have developed an app that uses the sound to detect dangerous mosquitoes. Asher Jones has the story.
That's the sound of the most dangerous animal in the world, the mosquito. Mosquitoes kill hundreds of thousands of people each year by spreading microbes that cause diseases such as malaria, dengue, and yellow fever. Now, researchers have harnessed the sound to build a new app for cell phones or any Android or iOS-based device that will help monitor where these deadly insects are found. Hari Priya Vaidehi Narayanan says that anyone with a cell phone can help tackle these diseases by using the Abuzz app to identify mosquitoes.
If they see a mosquito around us, they just open the phone, open up the app, point their phone towards that mosquito, and hit a record button.
Narayanan started working on the project as a graduate student at Stanford University. She's now in the Department of Immunology at the University of California, Los Angeles.
So then when the mosquito, you know, flaps its wings and starts flying around, it makes that noise, right? That annoying buzzing noise. That noise is what gets recorded by the Abuzz app.
Many mosquito-borne diseases don't have cures or vaccines, so targeting mosquitoes is the best approach to control these diseases.
If we're going to tackle diseases caused by mosquitoes like malaria or dengue, the most important step is to know where the mosquitoes are.
But traditional mosquito monitoring can be time-consuming and expensive because it requires labor-intensive trapping and trained scientists to identify the tiny insects. There are around 3,500 different mosquito species, but only about 40 are dangerous to humans, according to Manu Prakash, professor of bioengineering at Stanford University and principal investigator of the project.
In your backyard, do you have a nuisance mosquito or do you have a potentially dangerous mosquito?
To answer that question, Prakash's team decided to listen. When mosquitoes beat their wings up and down, they produce that distinctive buzzing sound. Every mosquito species makes a slightly different buzz. That's the sound of a nuisance mosquito, one that doesn't carry human disease-causing parasites. That's the sound of a potentially harmful mosquito that can carry malaria. Users record a mosquito sound with the Abuzz app on their cell phone. Just 1 or 2 seconds is enough. The app compares this recording against a database and decides which species of mosquito it is most likely to be. Because the tool, any cell phone or smartphone, is already in billions of people's pockets, the team says they'll be able to monitor mosquitoes on a much larger scale than previously possible.
This is something that doesn't require fancy smartphones. Just very bare minimum basic cell phones are actually good enough.
By crowdsourcing mosquito information from all across the world, the app will build maps of where dangerous mosquitoes are found. This will help scientists and health authorities predict where disease outbreaks might occur and where to target mosquito control. Prakash believes that this type of community engagement is key to tackling big problems like mosquito-borne disease.
The more number of people engaged, the better the tool gets. So we're very excited that if literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of people are recording mosquitoes every day, especially, you know, around the world, it will create the kind of a community that is needed.
The Abuzz app will be available to download for free in the next month or two. To learn more, visit abuzz.stanford.edu. Another group of researchers at the University of Oxford in the United Kingdom is developing a similar cell phone app called Mozware that identifies malaria mosquitoes by their sound. Although this sound makes most of us rush to swat the irritating insect, researchers hope you'll take out your phone and record it first. Asha Jones for VOA News, Washington.
This is Science in a Minute.
People living near the North and South Poles who look up to the night sky are often treated to natural light shows called auroras. Scientists say these shimmering waves of colored light are the result of the interaction of highly charged particles of the solar wind with the magnetosphere that surrounds and protects Earth. Auroras have also been spotted on other planets and moons within the solar system. After analyzing data gathered by the various instruments aboard ESA's Rosetta spacecraft, a team of scientists has discovered that the comet 67P Churyumov-Gerasimenko has an aurora that glows in far ultraviolet light. The scientists found that the aurora is produced by solar wind particles interacting with gases that surround and radiate from the comet, known as a comet or tail. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Jennifer Lopez, Will Smith, Tyler Perry, and BTS were big winners at the E! People's Choice Awards Sunday night, honoring fan favorites in music, TV, film, and social media. It was hosted by Demi Lovato. Lopez received the People's Icon Award. Tyler Perry was honored with the People's Champion of 2020 Award, and Tracee Ellis Ross was presented with the Fashion Icon Award. Lopez was greeted by her children on a video link and gave an inspirational acceptance speech with words of encouragement to women and girls. You've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Tracy Carter, I'm Lori London in Washington. Thanks so much for listening.